You have metta because you are told you better have metta or what?
Yes. So
part of the reason is that part
because
of the
you are told to do this and you have metta.
I heard people saying metta is good. Okay. And then,
but what is the difference between metta and attachment?
Metta is unconditioned kindness, friendliness. Attachment is you have greed and expectation. Attachment will bring agitation, unhappiness.
What is the object of metta? What is the object of metta? What is
person?
Right.
Beings.
Uh-huh.
Right. Living beings.
But
the object of attachment.
So, in order to have metta to beings, you are told to say, to recite, or what?
Yes.
But is it metta or it is attachment to the result that you'd like to have?
Personally, for myself, I just want to experiment. For other people, I cannot speak.
But so because why do you want to experiment?
Curious.
About?
About, you know, when people say metta is good and you make a big change in people's life. And then in Hong Kong, many people, they cannot accept themselves or harsh to themselves, you know. So I was thinking, maybe let me explore metta. Without doing this, everybody has metta. I'm not saying you need to do this to so that you will have more. I just want to explore. That's why.
So you want to explore, you're not studying Dhamma? Right?
No.
But I think that's a part of the studying, right?
Well, Dhamma is not for experimenting.
Why not? Why not?
I mean,
it's like it's written in the Visuddhimagga, right? And if I want to find out, right, and then spending the time and energy to follow it
find
and
out
see.
What? It's all about reality. Dhamma is about reality.
Okay.
But I think Jessica will better understand the shortcomings of metta meditation as a result of having done it than people who have never done it. Well,
I think that the most important thing is to really understand whether it's metta or not metta. Instead of thinking that it's metta, see?
I agree. That's why I try.
And how can one know? It's not you or me or anyone can know. It's panya, right understanding.
Yes.
And having more right understanding, it conditions metta and other kusala too,
yes.
Not only metta. Better than be told to have metta.
Maybe we could talk about accumulations of metta, because I think really that's what it all comes down to. People have different accumulations of metta.
Can we say at moment of kusala it's metta too?
And alopa and so many other.
Alopa is there, adosa is there.
Can I read this quotation? It's not directly related to metta meditation, but I found this impressive. The cittas of some people have accumulated a great deal of kusala. Even when they meet someone who is full of defilements, they can still have loving kindness, compassion, or equanimity because of the accumulations of wholesomeness. Whereas the world of someone else may be a world of hatred, annoyance, anger, and displeasure according to his accumulations. Thus, in reality, each person is all the time in his own world. And I thought of this morning because of one friend. Last night we had mosquitoes in our rooms, and there was one friend who had no temptation whatsoever to harm the mosquito, whereas for me, I'm afraid to say the mosquito did not make it to the morning. And I shouldn't joke, but I mean, and it's just interesting that in one sense, I think it seems like a mistake to say that one person has one world and a different person lives in a different world, because each moment there is a new world. But I think we have to be honest with ourselves about are accumulations to the best we can understand them. So could I ask you to say something about this idea of each person living?
So the best thing is to understand.
Yeah.
The best thing is to understand realities. Mm-hmm. The only way.
With regard to the retreat, I think everybody who studies today with Ajahn came from somewhere. Maybe a very few people just came to the center and heard a different approach to realities and immediately jumped on that and saw that that was something that was real. But so even though it may be wrong practice, we have to hope that hearing some truth, some teachings, could open a door to more in depth. And many people aren't ready to sit and talk. They want to do something special. And if you say, we're going to have a seminar, you couldn't get anybody to come. It's just reality of expectation. But if you say you're going to a retreat, you torture them a little, and then you educate them a little.
And you're going to do meditation.
Well, it at least brings them to the door that they might not have come to. Who can know?
Which door? What door?
Well,
in the world today, we have millions.
No, I know. But
they're all wrong door.
It's the wrong door. But, there are people who have a better understanding.
It would be in spite of the... You know?
I don't know. I think maybe it will open a door that someone might not go through. Possibly. We can't know. But
it's
just a
story.
It's
you like that story.
Of course I do. Otherwise I wouldn't say it.
You mentioned, Jessica, a comment about, well, people go around in Hong Kong and they're so harsh to themselves or something like this. So, of course, then they would be happy and then they... like the idea of having metta and starting with themselves and being nice and kind to themselves and finding the divine nature within them or whatever. But this is just...
not right understanding.
This is just more and more attachment to oneself, isn't it? It's got nothing whatsoever to do with metta, has it?
For me, I tried to explore for myself. So for other people, maybe it's a doorway, I don't know. The thing is, what is metta, right? So it comes down, what is metta? I was telling you that in the retreat, people just having these thoughts. So is it real metta? I don't know, right?
So when I asked you before, what is the object of metta? For example, people have the idea having metta to themselves first, mm-hmm. and finding themselves important, but this cannot be the object of metta.
So I think this is the teacher actually follows what the Visuddhimagga is saying, just taking terms the self, and then he make it clear, this is you have the concept of self, this is not vipassana, this is not leading you to understanding, you just cultivate the samatha, the calm and peace of mind, and then it is self, and then the teacher, and then the friend or enemy or whatever. So that's just follow the orders that list in the Visuddhimagga.
They think it's following the Visuddhimagga, but like now, if we think about ourselves, what do I feel like eating, or what will make me feel happy, or what drink can I have, and what am I going to have for lunch? Any metta? Thinking of oneself and one's own welfare and one's own happiness. It's just attachment to oneself. So this isn't what is meant by in the Visuddhimagga. But we know that just as we would like to have nice food or be comfortable, so would others. So when we think of others, how we can help others have what we would like ourselves in their place. Mm-hmm. And we're concerned for their welfare, then this is...
No, this is how it's instructed. No, this is how it's instructed. The reason they do first... I didn't explain the whole instruction, right? The reason they do it for self for a few minutes, just to have an example. You wish yourself to be well such that you use the same kind of mindset to wish others.
And which is more confidence, to understand that all beings are only dhatu or elements. No matter it's kusala or akusala, it's conditioned. So even metta does not belong to anyone. It's just a characteristic of an element.
Yes.
By understanding this, can one have more metta than just trying to have it?
Of course, of course.
So right understanding can condition metta, no matter where and when, not just sitting and being told to be or to have metta.
Just to follow that along, Ajahn, I think that when there's more understanding of how conditioned the elements are, that what we take for me or myself are just different realities, then one understands for other people also that their way of behavior is just conditioned.
Yeah.
So it's very helpful
to have
less dosa to other people. And we say the more understanding there is of dhammas, then the more conditions there are for metta to other people.
Right. Mm-hmm. For kusala.
For kusala, including metta.
I always remember a talk in India where Kom, I think, was asking Ajahn about the street children and the beggars and how can you deal with that, and you just said, just understand, and he says, but they're bothering my teacher, just understand. I can't stand it when they do that, just understand.
Otherwise, it's always I who'd like to have such reality.
It's very difficult for us to know metta from lopa, but that at the same time we cannot deny that metta is a reality that arises and develops and accumulates even when we don't know. So I don't think we can say that metta is not developed at times during any situation, whether it's a retreat or not. We just don't know. But we also have to be honest that to know the lopa from the metta is very difficult, and we have to assume that it's mostly lopa, I think.
Yeah, but I think Sujin is saying, so if I hear him correctly, Sukin is saying, if someone think I want to have more metta for myself, it's wrong. I agree. Yeah, because there's I, you know, there's just one thing. Yeah, that's why I always agree with him.
On the other hand, although metta does arise from time to time in daily life, it's not necessarily easy to understand the moments of metta from the moments without metta. I suppose it's a matter of learning more about the characteristic.
But from what I understand, and I think Ajahn confirmed yesterday, whether we know the characteristic of the metta or not, it's still developing, it's still accumulating.
Well, accumulating, but not developing, really.
Okay.
With no understanding.
Is that right, Ajahn? For there to be what we could really call development of metta, there has to be the understanding of the moment as metta, correctly.
As a reality. Otherwise, we try to pinpoint whether this is metta or not. That is not understanding. Because even the word dharma, reality, whatever is real right now. Seeing is real, hearing is real, and other jetasikas are also real. But there is no intention to have the understanding of a particular one. Because even its dhamma is real, it's not self, it's not developed yet. And that object has fallen away. So you don't mind whatever it is, because even understanding as a reality is not yet well established.
This is a different topic, but perhaps related. I'm interested in the way citta and chetasika are associated. And so, for example, a citta with the lopa and citta with metta, they're associated dhammas, whereas citta and I sense are disassociated. And I find that that's an interesting thing to consider, that to know nama from rupa, the fact that citta and eye sense are disassociated. I think visible object is not considered disassociated because it's an external object, but I just find it's interesting that associated dhammas must be so difficult to know one from the other. I think there's an image of the chetasika, a soup of chetasikas or something like that, whereas nama and rupa, I feel there's, again, as I was saying yesterday, there's more confidence that I feel that understanding is going to develop in that area, whereas to know, for example, the story of a friend who went to the holy sites in India and she cried, and she asked you, what is that? Is that, was that kusala or akusala? And you said, it's just thinking. I think we shouldn't say that we can't understand that, but I think it must be very difficult.
The understanding reality as a reality is will bring to more understanding of the characteristics of realities, which are different. For example, hardness. No understanding it as a reality. Until then, more understanding of more realities will bring less attachment to try to understand with the idea of self is trying.
Why do you often refer to the object as rupa? You refer to hardness more than referring to, for example...
Okay, I changed to sound.
Well, that's what I mean. I find it more...
Or lobha, haven't we been talking a lot about lobha this morning?
Yes, but I just find that Ajahn usually talks about rupa, and that's just my feeling from listening to her a lot, and at that level of understanding.
Whatever appears can be studied and understood rather than that which does not appear, right? For example, this object is appearing to understanding as just a reality. And that which experiences, how can you understand that? That it's there too. Whenever there is visible object, there must be that which sees. So it depends on the accumulation. If you have accumulation to understand visible, seeing is okay. You don't mind about visible object.
Can we say that rupa appears more or appears...
That is thinking again. Mm. We're caught up with idea all the time, whether this or that. Why not understanding, developing the understanding by sati itself, not by our own thinking to have it. Mm.
Can we say that rupa is more obvious and
again.
Nama is more subtle? I can't help it, Ajahn, because I heard you talk about that and it stayed with me.
Yeah, so I would say again, it depends.
Okay.
Yeah.
And select. And one other point is one reason why there's a lot of talk about seeing invisible object as opposed to just say lobha and metta is because the distinction between nama and rupa has to be clearly understood, because if there isn't an understanding of the distinction between nama and rupa, between seeing and visible object, hearing and sound, there cannot be any detachment from the idea of atta, from self. So it's not enough just to talk about attachment and metta.
And I think that yesterday I talked more on visible object.
Today,
and hardness and softness.
So, can we say at each moment, wherever is clear, you know, the sixth sense door, wherever is clear, you know, let it be. You know, where's the visible object or hardness or feeling or thought? Right? All those is reality, wherever that's clear.
While we're talking about seeing invisible object, can there be condition for right awareness to understand hardness?
Yes.
See? It doesn't matter what we're talking about.
That's why you always visit all Dhamma.
Any Dhamma, any time.
There's always so much lopa related to everything, including Dhamma. So last year when I was here talking to you, it was all lopa about my sila and what kind of person I was. And now there's a lot of lopa about knowing nama from rupa. So I guess I could say that the lopa is moving in the right direction. But lopa is the master. And of course the master would not lead me in the right direction. But I do feel confident that I'm reflecting more on realities than situations, at least.
Lopa leave you alone for a while. Just for a while.
Mm-hmm. A moment.
Mm. A moment. Mm. Not always.
Very rarely.
It's more like you're beginning to move in the right direction, but lopa is not leaving you.
No, of course not. Of course not.
You like your master very much. Now you begin to see that your master is your enemy.
Yes, but the master is still following me along. As understanding is leading me in the right direction, but the master is following along as well, waiting for a chance to... Well, he always has me, but it's understanding that has the rare opportunity. And lopa as the student, the teacher and the student. I think you talked about that earlier today already, but...
Can be both at different times.
When we follow, we're the student.
Right. And when it say, come, come, it is master, our teacher.
And when you said several times that what you found so helpful was when you were talking last year about sila and the importance of sila first, and you mentioned Ajahn's comment you found so helpful was, yes, but not enough. The way you understood it was that, yes, it's good to emphasize sila or sila first, but there also has to be understanding of realities, whereas I understood her to be saying, just understand realities, sila will develop. No idea of sila first at all.
The idea I also appreciated was that even if we, through whatever kinds of attachment, have a perfect behavior in this lifetime, what about the next lifetime? Well, it's only understanding that will really help us. It's difficult for many people to understand how panya accumulates from lifetime to lifetime. Could I ask you to talk about
that? Otherwise, there would not be this moment.
When the Buddha teaches about dhammas in so many ways, as ayatana and dhatu and khanda, is he helping us by emphasizing a different aspect? Ayatana is a meeting point. It emphasizes the amazingness of the meeting of seeing invisible object, and well, not the meeting of seeing invisible object. So the meeting, the time of seeing. Is khanda emphasizing the self aspect? If you could explain about the different emphasis of
the impermanence of all realities, which are conditioned to arise and then pass away instantly.
The khandas. Mm-hmm.
So should we cling to that which just appear and disappear?
And the khandas seem to, thank you, the khandas seem to lend themselves to seeing an aggregate that becomes a being almost.
Khanda is a reality.
Just one reality.
Reality at a time. Mm-hmm.
Can one say that whether one's talking about khandas, dhatus, ayatanas, that even though it seems like they're classifications, well, each dhatu is one reality, each ayatana is one reality, each khanda is one reality. Mm. Yes.